This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Easy listening podcast. Just sit back, relax, and be bored out of your mind. This is brought to you by Barry Manilow's Marshmallows. Sorry, I kind of zoned out for a second there. Wrong podcast. I think this one's called Sunday Groove. Yes, that was the one that goes out to nobody. I just record for myself. But this is Sunday Groove, episode 8, and I have already gone sideways already. Thank you for coming back. If you've been here before, I have a very special guest tonight. He has never been on the show before. He is on the Pop Network he's a frequent collaborator. Wow. With Todd Weber on Conversation Comics, and he also recently started a podcast with our Jennifer Smith, called Talkin' Pop. But if you're a wrestling fan, you would also know him from the show Survey Says. So here, without any further ado, is Mr. Tim Capel.
David Sunday, thank you for that excellent introduction, and I am very glad to hear this is, in fact, Sunday Groove. I was wondering at first, and a little bit worried that I was on the wrong podcast, When I heard your voice come in at the beginning there, or a voice that perhaps may have or may not have been you. But, yeah, very relieved and happy to be here. Yeah, making the rounds here with Place to Be Nation Pop, sort of the Place to Be Nation Pop world tour that I'm trying to embark on, it seems like. But very fun. Going to have a good time tonight, I think.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I know it's hilarious to me how off topic, and that's quite okay on this show, the Conversation Comics gets during y'all's X-Men run.
that's part of, I think, what I look forward to the most, doing that with Todd periodically is we just go off on these tangents that I hope they're as entertaining to other people as they are to ourselves. They could be a little self-indulgent, perhaps, but I mean, we definitely have fun with it, and I mean, it's like the Wild Wild West sometimes. You know, we try not to impose any restrictions on ourselves and what we're talking about, and trying to review a very specific, precise run of Uncanny X-Men comics. So it's maybe not exactly what everyone would expect in listening to a show like that. But, yeah, that's always a treat for me.
Well, my favorite, and I know it's because it mentioned my show, but it was hilarious when Todd asked you something about Sunday Groove, and he's like, and why did he ask you to review the 90210 soundtrack? And then y'all go off on, like, a long 90210 side quest, and I was, like, about to die laughing.
Right.
It's like, I think that
it's like
usually
we just seize on those things. It's too easy.
It was just hilarious because I did not see that coming at all, and it was got to be the most unique shout out to my show I've gotten so far.
I'm glad you could be the inspiration for that.
I mean, on Hard Traveling Fanboys, I always have the easy like David Sunday part that Nick refuses to call it Sunday Groove. because that was one of the two names, and okay. I, for some reason, it there was a vote, and it was very close, and I last minute just chose Sunday Groove. So everybody's count votes did count, contrary to popular belief. It did count, but it, you know, since I was the host, I decided to go with Sunday Groove because it was shorter. And
so in his canon, the show's called something else. In other words, he's made that up for himself.
It was just one of those things that I knew short, to the point. Nobody can mistake what the conversation is going to be about. So anyway, I'm trying a few things out that are a little bit new and moving things around. Because last episode, I forgot to even shill how to get in touch with me. I'm going to go ahead and real quick just say Sunday Groove PTB on Twitter, if you want to reach out to me, and otherwise David Sunday on Facebook. And I'll shill again at the end, I'm sure, but I just wanted to say it because I was so mad at myself. I'm like, how did I forget? I asked people to reach out, and I didn't tell them how. So anyway, I actually recorded a jingle the other day for Current Spins, but I will give a really quick rundown of what it is. Can be any music, any song, anything, old, new, whatever. The whole thing is it's just something you're currently listening to. I guess kind of sort of obsessed with. That's how my listening goes. It's all kinds of ultra obsessive stuff.
Current Spins, what you've been listening to. Current Spins, it can be old or new. Current Spins.
Do you have anything you're currently listening to more recently, other than the stuff we're going to talk about on the show, like the regular stuff?
You know, it kind of breaks my heart a little bit to say that I don't. And it's not just because I've been listening to so much of what we're going to talk about on the show.
Right.
Because I have. For pleasure, not just for, you know, preparation purposes, but we'll get into that. But I feel like I have reached that age now where I just don't really do new music as much. I'm not, like, cynical about it and all, you know, get off my lawn. It's not like, you know, that's not my attitude at all. I don't know. I just have gotten kind of set in my ways, I think, and perhaps a little bit complacent. And I like what I like, and I'm not so much actively seeking out new stuff anymore. That's not to say that things can't grab me. If I do happen to just catch something or hear something, you know, that at a party or, you know, that somebody might recommend, could really, you know, change that. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know if it's an age thing or it's just a too much going on in my life thing. But, yeah, it's not really happening for me so much anymore with newer music.
Understandable. If I didn't have a group of friends that point out music to me from time to time or doing this show, it's been so cool. I've had a few people recommend some stuff that really I never would have heard of because I listen to the radio a little bit, but mostly I try to either do podcasts or CDs in the car. So it's usually my go-tos, like my normal stuff. But occasionally there'll be somebody come along and mention something. And actually, I'm going to start with that. Andy Helene recently mentioned, actually, no, he didn't recommend it for the podcast. He just wrote a little article on music from last year, and he mentioned an artist, Danko Jones, I guess that's how you say it. His album, I think it came out last year, it's called Wildcat, and I don't have any deep things to say about it, but it was just such a rockin' album. It just had a good groove. The guy's energetic, and there were just a few songs that stood out. My Little R&R, the self-titled song Wildcat, and then Diamond Lady. It's just a really catchy rock song. If you've never heard of him and you want to hear something new, that would be the one I would say to click on. It is interesting if you like, I guess you'd call it kind of hard rock, like not screaming, but I should have refreshed my memory beforehand. But anyway, it's not little, not, you know, definitely not soft rock.
Okay.
So anyway, and that was really cool because I know I play video games a lot, and in spells, and I love changing the music in it. I'll mute the actual music from the game and throw in what I want to listen to, and that was one of the artists I did that with. That was just so much fun on Assassin's Creed, just to go through playing the game and listening to something new.
Excellent. I'm glad that you enjoyed that. Shout out to Andy Helene, my co-host on Survey Says. So just a little light self-promotion in there to make that all about me. having not listened to what you just put over so strongly, but very good.
It is fine to self-promote at any point during the show.
I
do it anytime I'm on a show, and I will I definitely mention it a lot on my own show. So anyway.
Cheap plug. Okay.
But the other thing I currently, because I like Tim also, I don't always consume new music, but thankfully, thanks to the podcast and just here and there, I'll pick up some new stuff. And this one's not a new artist for me. He's a singer from one of my favorite bands that I'm pretty sure I'll do a whole episode for pretty soon. It's one of the few that's not actually planned yet, but it's something that I really want to do. And that is the lead singer of Alter Bridge. Can you still hear me, Tim? This thing says it's got a poor connection for some reason.
Yep, okay. I'm okay. Still with you.
Okay, cool. But it's the lead singer of Alter Bridge, Miles Kennedy. He has been talking about a solo album for almost 10 years now, and it never would come out. He would work with Slash in between Alter Bridge albums, and I loved it. It was good, but I wanted that solo album. So anyway, he finally put it out. It came out Friday, March 9th, and it is a really good album. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to fully form all my opinions about it, but it is unique. It's so different than Alter Bridge. It's more singer-songwriter, which is what I wanted, because I wanted it to be different. That's what side projects are. And it's just beautiful, unique, soulful, has some blues influences. It's mostly acoustic, but he brings in some mandolin and some other stuff that he plays. According to the credits, he plays everything except for the drums and percussion and some of the bass parts. I think he did some of them, but not all of them. So I just thought that was really cool. If you haven't checked that out, if you like Alter Bridge, if you haven't checked out Alter Bridge, check them out. But if you like singer-songwriter stuff, definitely check it out. My initial thoughts are Blind Faith, really cool bluesy acoustic song, Devil on the Wall. It almost, and this is probably a bad description, but I'm just going to call it kind of a bluesy rockabilly kind of feel. Ghost of Shangri-La is really good, Haunted by Design, and then Songbird. All of those just really stand out to me. They're just beautiful songs, talking about some really deep stuff. And I just really love it and hope people will check it out. Tim, have you ever listened to Alter Bridge, or do you know much of anything about them?
A little bit here and there. That's the former Creed guys?
Yes. Okay. It's the former Creed guys with just Miles Kennedy added it on vocals. And Miles also plays guitar in that band. But yeah, everybody but minus Scott Stapp from Creed joined up and made Alter Bridge. And people, like, really, some of them still give them crap for it, and others just never check them out because of that. But I'm like, I like Creed a good bit. I like Alter Bridge a lot better. And
Well, and I think a lot of people, if they didn't like Creed, then, you know, Scott Stapp was probably a big part of that. So
right.
Take him out of the equation, you're left with still a pretty good foundation. I mean, musically, artistically.
Right. And I love that they did something so different. So that was a band I love, and they've done some other solo stuff. But the lead singer, he'd been talking about it for years, and so I was so happy for something to come out. I really hope his first solo album will actually come out one day. He says he threw it away, but I really hope that's not true. I hope he just put it aside. He said he spent too many years on it and just didn't feel it was relevant anymore.
Maybe just trying to drum up interest for it.
The interest is there. The interest has been there for at least in a lot of us for a long time. Because that voice is just, it lends itself to all over the place ability. So, all right. So you say you didn't have any current ones, which is perfectly fine. I just wanted to double check before we move on to the actual topic of the, we're not moving on to that yet. See, I added the segment like 2 months ago, and I'm still getting in the swing of it.
Yes, we have a format sheet we're going to try to abide by, right?
Loosely, yes. So, okay. Anyway, this actually, the idea popped up during the Tom Petty episode when Todd asked me some questions. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to add some of these to my own show and like on a regular basis. So what is one of your first music memories?
I was thinking about this, and I want to say when I was 4, maybe 5 years old, I have very distinct memories of waking up super, super early in the morning. My mom and I, we lived in this little tiny apartment, and she would get up every Saturday morning and do just household chores type things, very early. Would not get me up or anything, but I would wake up at some point in the course of this. And what would usually wake me up was her playing Steve Winwood.
Okay.
It was just kind of her go-to when she would clean, I guess. And I'm sure she played other stuff too, but that, for whatever reason, I guess because I like a lot of his stuff. So this was like, we're talking late 80s, I guess. It was like Higher Love.
Nice.
Roll With It, which became like one of my early like favorite songs. I don't even know why. I don't like the song that much today, but it's fine. But back then it was like, oh, this is so great. And so I would just wake up hearing this, and when that's the first thing you hear that's stirring you out of a slumber, it's just sort of like, well, this is nice. So I don't know why, but that really sticks out to me. Steve Winwood. Later on, she would play like into the 90s, and this was not, morning cleaning rituals or anything, but she played a lot of Sarah McLachlan.
Okay.
I'm trying to think back part of the rotation. Do you remember Dishwalla?
I do, yes.
Okay. So they're, some of these what you would hear on like those 90s compilation albums now, those type bands. So she got into the alternative music scene, which sounds so strange and dated now. But
yes.
Yeah, those are some of my memories before I was really actively consuming music or knowing what I was listening to was later being able to draw those connections.
Now, I think this was before. I cannot remember where in her career she did it, but was it the Sarah McLachlan song they put in the depressing dog commercials where, like, adopt this dog or it dies? Was it that
yes.
one?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yep, that album.
I'm not as familiar with her songs, but, like, I love her music when I've heard of it, but I just remember that commercial gets me. I'm like they might as well just hold a gun to the dog's head, be like, adopt this dog or it's going to die. And
Building a Mystery was kind of, I think, the big one. Well, seemed like would get played more than others. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
So that was, that I guess would have to be, if you have to pick a favorite Sarah McLachlan song, I suppose I could do that with that.
Nice.
Oh, and you know what else? I just remembered the City of Angels soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
The Nicolas Cage, Meg Ryan movie.
Shockingly, I did know. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
That had the Goo Goo Dolls song, Iris.
Yes.
Which was kind of their, like, they'd been sort of in a slump, and then, like, that was huge and inescapable.
Right.
But that old soundtrack is really good.
I'm not familiar with the soundtrack, but I definitely knew Iris was on there, and that is off of Dizzy Up the Girl, which is easily my favorite Goo Goo Dolls album.
U2's got a pretty cool song on that, too.
Oh, cool.
What's it called? I'm hearing it in my head how it goes. I think it's called, is it called If God Will Send His Angels? Kind of a mouthful of a title. I know that's part of the chorus, but I think that's what the song is actually called. But just a lot of good stuff on that.
Yeah, if God will send his angels.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's too bad it didn't have one of those pretentious names like certain bands do, where it's like a long sentence of it that the words are never used in the song, but they decide to title it that to sound cool. And I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's not... Anyway.
Yep.
I promised I wasn't going to trash music on this show, so I guess I won't name drop any of them that do that, but unless you want to.
Hey, well, I was going to say, one of the bands we'll be talking about has an album title that is somewhat, I love the album, but it's a little, come on, guys. But we'll get there.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I guess it is a little pretentious, but.
You're thinking of it now, too.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So cool. Well, yeah, I always love hearing people's different music memories because, yeah, as you pointed out, you're not in control of that. That's like stuff that your parents are playing. It's before you're consuming your own music, really, and picking your own music. And
exactly.
It's that stuff will almost always come back to me, the stuff that I heard growing up. So really cool stuff. And I love how unique it always is because everybody's has been different so far.
I love those stories too. It's always fun hearing about and, you know, being able to compare and contrast, like, especially people who are different ages grew up when, you know, different, genres were big.
Are you 84, baby? Sorry if,
83, so close enough.
Sorry, so I hope that isn't a big secret of your age.
No, not at all.
84, baby, so I thought we were right around the same age. And
yep.
But with me being raised in the South, mine was a more country background in my very early days.
Okay.
So a little Garth Brooks, Brooks and Dunn, that kind of stuff, some of my early memories.
Gotcha.
But anyway, since... I don't want every show. I'm not going to go into all deep into mine. Let's see. What was your first concert that you remember?
It was, and I'll preface this by saying I would consider myself a pretty late bloomer when it comes to just getting into music as one of the things that people are into. my first concert was, it was like a radio festival type show. It was some anniversary type thing for our local rock station, essentially. And so it had various different bands on this show, and the kind of co-headliners are the two we're going to be talking about.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, like when they announced it was just like this dream come true for me. I was just like floored because I had pretty recently gotten into them. I was maybe, I guess I would say a year into the fandom, so to speak, of it all. So it was just like, this is amazing.
So
I can't
what year
believe
was this
it.
Around?
This was, I was trying to figure it out. I was looking for the details. And of course, the station is now defunct. It's flipped formats
right.
Several times over since then. I think it was 2001.
Okay.
But, I mean, I was like 17 years old. I mean, I was, you know, not real young the way I think of most kids being when they have their first concert. Or that they're, you know, into music and actively seeking it out.
Right.
But, yeah, it was a great show.
I guess we can name drop them. It's not a huge secret what the show is going to be. It's going to be listed
yeah, exactly.
up there. So it's so Jimmy World and Arlie DePeace, was that? Who it was.
That's right.
Awesome.
Yep. And they both played pretty much full sets. I just remember it was super hot that day and, you know, it was all outdoors and I can't imagine being on stage in those conditions. But let me think, who else was on it? American Hi-Fi.
Okay.
So this, again, tells you kind of the era.
Oh, that definitely gives away what, what is there.
Yeah, they were like the only other name band, I want to say, because there were also some local acts that kind of opened and sort of played you through kind of the lulls, because this was just, you know, an all day type thing. And it was at like our local fairgrounds. So, I mean, that was a lot of fun just as a first, like, you can't ask for better than that, right?
That's incredible. That's way better than either one of my first concerts.
Well, guess what? I might sink this year because shortly thereafter, and I only mention this because we brought them up earlier, I saw Creed at the Richmond Coliseum with my mom. My mom was super into Creed. I could kind of take them or leave them. They were fine. I don't really have the vitriol in my heart that a lot of people do for that band. But again, this was like 2002. They had done, what was it? My Sacrifice was one of the big songs. Like they were kind of just really put on the map, I think, at that point. That very brief window when they were like, everything was all about them. And so, you know, things happened after that, of course, that rendered that experience somewhat embarrassing. But, you know, I have no shame about it, really. It was whatever.
There's no shame needed there because I sought them out and saw them in 2010. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't get to see them back around the time you did. And that was when I really wanted to see them. Like, I remember watching them on VH1, like, they played, like, the first four songs from the Weathered album, which is what had My Sacrifice and everything on it. And
that's what it was. Yep, I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah, and I was so enamored with it and thought it was the coolest thing, but didn't get to see the show. And then they break up, and never thought it would happen. And I remember around 2010, they announced a tour. They were doing a reunion. The album was actually good when they dropped a new album in 2009. Didn't like it as much as I did any of the Alter Bridge stuff, but it was good. It was way better than I expected. Like, I honestly kind of wanted it to suck. And I know that's horrible to say, but like, I love making fun of stuff. And at that point, that's what I kind of wanted, and it didn't. So when it was like $25, I was like, I've got to go. So I got to see them, and actually a band that I was huge into in high school, Skillet, opened for them. So I'm like, cool, I get to see Skillet for my third time and also get to see Creed. So, yeah, so no shame there. I may joke occasionally about some bands, but I try not to talk trash about any band, and Creed is actually one I really like. So,
I don't know what jogged my memory, but Jerry Cantrell – toured with them for that that 2002 weather tour, I guess. And so he was the opening act, and this was the year, I think that was the same year that Layne Staley died.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, it was kind of cool to see him doing his own stuff, and he did cover some Alice in Chains songs as well. But I was really impressed. Very impressed by what I saw of him, because you don't really know what to expect after, you know, a situation like that.
Right.
And I mean, he'd never really been a front man before that I know of. So yeah, that was pretty neat getting to see him.
Well, the first concert I remember very well that I saw was Lee Greenwood. And if you don't know him by name, just think of the song God Bless the USA. Is that the right one? I think so. Anyway, I did not choose that show. It was my father was really wanting to see them, or see him, and it was after a football game we were at, so we went, and it was unique. Let's just say that it wasn't bad, but
somewhat unique.
it just wasn't what I would go for. Before that, I either heard part of like Alabama or some other country act playing at the Coliseum in Montgomery, but I was so young and really wasn't paying close attention.
Gotcha.
Yes, God Bless the USA from 1992, Lee Greenwood. Okay. I hate being wrong on my podcast, so I was like, I'm going to actually check myself before I do that. So, okay. That you really had a cool one. My concerts didn't really get that cool until the third or fourth one, but... All right. What's the first album that you bought?
I guess it was really two, because I got them at the same time. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer, but wasn't as late as the 2000s. This would have been, I want to say, 94, 95, the albums had been out for a little while, but they were, it was The Offspring's Smash.
Okay.
And Green Day's...
Dookie?
Yes. Why was I blanking on that?
Well, I was like, I knew it had to be either that or Insomniac.
Right, yeah.
Right around that time.
So it was just a situation where I guess The Offspring was my first favorite band, where I, I don't know. It's so weird for me because music is sort of, I don't want to say low in my personal pecking order of interest, but for the longest time, it just seemed like nothing I was hearing really grabbed me the way it seemed to be for other people. Mm-hmm. And so, taste is always a subjective thing, and I don't know, I just feel like compared to movies, to TV shows, to books, to comic books, for whatever reason, whatever it is, music is the most subjective of subjective things.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, even when I find something I really like, and I will get recommendations from other people, well, if you like this, you'd also probably really like this other act or this other song, which checks all those same boxes. And I'll go out and listen to it, and more often than not, I'm like, yeah, it does check those boxes, but I didn't really like that.
Right, right.
You know, it's so just hit and miss. It's such a toss-up whether you're going to like something just because you like this other thing when it comes to music. And I don't know, maybe that's a very obvious sort of surface observation, but it just, I think my tastes are perhaps more narrow than other people, and that's not to say I have better taste. It's just I'm very much, I like what I like with music.
Right.
And, finally when I heard the song Self-Esteem from The Offspring on Smash, it was like, oh, I really like this. You know, who is this? What's this song? I want to hear more of this. And gradually I heard more and more stuff from them and pretty consistently liked it, which had kind of never happened before. So I was like, I think I finally have a favorite band. And similar story with Green Day. I really responded to that song When I Come Around.
Oh yeah, really good.
On Dookie. In Longview and among other major singles from that. And so I got those at the same time. I didn't buy them myself. They were birthday presents.
Okay.
So,
but you picked them out though?
Yeah, I picked them.
Okay,
like,
cool.
I actively wanted to own those.
Nice.
And, I definitely stuck with liking Offspring for a while. And, I mean, I still do as an adult. I still go back to some of their stuff. And I think they're very consistent up and down just in terms of their catalog.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been the thing that they are, And that's kind of admirable in a way. And Green Day to a lesser extent, I guess they were just sort of the, they took a backseat to Offspring in my sort of, personal preferences, but I like them a lot too, but Offspring I actually kept up with for a while. And, eventually they would be, supplanted by some of the bands we're going to get into. Later on, but yeah, I followed them a good bit, and that was my first favorite band for better or worse.
That's a good place to start. I didn't get that one. A friend put it on cassette for me around eighth grade, I think, and I got really hooked on Smash and Dookie. Like that was around. It was like that, those two, and then Tragic Kingdom by No Doubt. Like were some of my first I guess middle school bootlegs that people mm-hmm. got for me, and but I will say Offspring Smash holds up really well. Americana for the most part as well.
I like Americana too.
Yeah, Americana is really good and really fun. But actually, I like all their albums. Like even the modern stuff, I enjoy them. Like they're not amazing. I'm probably not going to buy all of them. But like I'll go to Spotify and listen to them and enjoy them. Like I actually did, I think a week or two ago, was listening to them. And I mean, They're not amazing. They're not going to grab me the same way Smash did, but it's still music I enjoy. Whereas Green Day, up until American Idiot, I loved pretty much anything Green Day did. And I don't hate them now, but like I will not actively seek out anything
sure.
Green Day
yeah.
in recent years. Like
after they had that big, you know, reinvention,
yes.
which I was still into them too after that, but. It's so weird that American Idiot was, it seemed like it was very celebrated and people were really into it at the time. And now it's like, it feels so of its time, even more than something like Dookie, which, because at least with that, it kind of, it's one of those albums that really kickstarted that whole, like, sort of, what do you call it, like a pop punk sort of movement with these bands that
right.
a lot of, purists probably super hated, but kids like us were very into and found extremely accessible. So I don't know. It's weird how when they had their big comeback, now that feels so sort of dated. Even though I mean I still like American Idiot, but it just doesn't have that kind of timelessness to it.
Right. Yeah. I've not actually listened to it too much in recent years. I mean, inevitably, somebody always plays Wake Me Up When September Ends,
yeah.
which I loved before it got overplayed on the radio and everywhere else. Mm. And I know that sounds just the pretentious thing to say, I liked that before it got on the radio, but it yeah. was good. And then it got driven into the ground. But I don't know, that album stood out to me a lot in college, and I loved it for that. But their newer stuff just is not the same. But I guess that's not a bad thing. Some people still enjoy them, and I will say I'm impressed with any band that can stay around that long. Like I think that's really cool. And if they truly still enjoy it, that's more power to them. Well, cool. I think I had one last one. Do you sing or do you play an instrument at all?
No, and the world is much better for that. I sing in the car like everybody, but and I faked my way through recorder in fourth grade. But beyond that, no real musical talent.
Now, do you karaoke?
No, not not under most circumstances.
Okay,
which if if I'm sober, that's not something I'm going to do. So, but
understandable.
I could probably get dragged into it. I'll put it that way, but it would not be a pretty sight.
Okay, so pretty much just sing it at home or in your car. That's pretty much your singing.
That's right.
Okay.
Where other people cannot hear.
You know, it's funny. A lot of times, most people are not as bad as they think they are. I have heard some that are worse. Obviously than they think they are, but like it's just one of those things. I think we're all our worst critic when it comes to that.
Could be. I would like to think, I would hope that I'm just self-aware and don't want to foist that on the world.
Well, fair enough. As we mentioned earlier, and it was so cool. I did not plan that, that it would match up. It was the first concert in the topic, but I remember it was funny when I contacted Tim. I mentioned getting him on the show, and he was like, "Well, I don't like that many bands," and I'm like, "That's okay." It's like, "Who do you like?" And and when you named off three bands you liked, I was like, "I like all those bands. We could talk about that. It won't be a problem because I do themed episodes, but like I just like to keep it fresh." So my last two have been more into stuff that. Didn't either make it mainstream or was in movies, so I thought it was a good time to come back to some bands that have been on the radio a good bit. And so I guess we'll start with your favorite, Jimmy Eat World, first. I'll let you lead here. Which album would you like to start talking about there?
Ooh, I think we probably should start with where it started for me, which was Bleed American.
Okay, I was hoping so, because I really don't have deep thoughts on any of their earlier stuff, but Bleed American was my first experience with them. It's awesome.
Well, it's one of those things where I first heard the song Bleed American on the radio, like that summer when it came out, which I guess was 2001, because that's going to become important. So I heard it on the radio, and I was like, this is a jamming, you know, this is just a banger of a song.
Yes.
And I was like, who is this? And, you know, I would listen so intently for, because they, you know, they, with the new songs, they're going to announce the song title and artist. And I caught, it was called Bleed American. I got that much. And this is before you could Google everything, right?
Right. Oh,
I mean, you could, but you sort of, you know.
What was it called back then? Do you remember, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was something before Google?
Oh gosh!
It was something. The one we used in the South was like the goofiest named ever, and I cannot believe it left me. But I can't think of it.
Yeah, all those old. There's like your Yahoo and your Altavis, and like all the weird.
Right, but it was weirder than
the
that.
Weird search engines that didn't make it. You know?
Right,
it's the whole thing. So I was like, okay, it's Bleed American, and I thought like the DJ said. Their name so fast that I thought he said Jimmy Whirl.
Okay.
And I was like, who, what? And so I think I did eventually have to look it up on the internet. It's like, oh, Jimmy Eat World. What a strange name, but, really dig the song. And, I mean, I bought Bleed American, the album, like as soon as it came out, that's how into it I was. And so, and what's interesting about that, maybe not interesting, but, you know, the album came out, I think, like that July or August of 01, and then 9/11 happened.
Right.
Sorry for this to take a dour note, but that happened, and all these songs started disappearing from the radio, right?
Right.
That could be potentially, I don't know, I guess we'd say triggering nowadays. And that was one of them that was kind of like a casualty of that effect was, you know, you have a song called Bleed American after this great American tragedy, and that's not going to get airplay anymore.
Right. Oh, of course not.
And so it just cut the legs off from that as a single. And after that, they ended up retitling the album. They just went, you know, it was called Bleed American, and then it just became the self-titled album.
Right.
Which they had actually already had one self-titled album, which was fortunately out of print at that point, because I don't think we want to get into that. But yeah, so the one that I bought was called Bleed American, and then they later, you know, went back to press and retitled it. It's crazy. That probably could have been the end of them in terms of being a mainstream success story, if not for they then had The Middle, which this is the kind of song everybody wants to hear,
right?
After a great American tragedy. And it's if I had heard The Middle without ever having heard Bleed American, I don't think I ever would have gotten into them.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that.
I don't hate the song. I don't even really dislike it. It's just it's not my jam at all. But I am so grateful for its existence because I think that, you know, off the back of that song and the success that it enjoyed and, you know, Bleed American, the album went platinum and it was just like that pretty much set them up for life and let them do whatever they wanted to after that. So I think we are blessed for its existence, even though The Middle is not a song I particularly dig.
If you ever want to trigger Greg, play The Middle if you're around him. He hates that song, and it's so funny to me how strongly he feels about it. Yeah,
that's funny. Well, and you know, if you didn't dig The Middle, of course, you can't hear Bleed American on the radio anymore.
Right.
They did have Sweetness as well, which I always think of as the song for people who didn't like The Middle from that album.
Which is funny because I don't remember, I cannot remember, I want to say I heard Bleed American and liked it first, but I might have, the one that always has stuck out to me from the album as far as like my first memory is Sweetness. So it might have,
yeah.
I mean, well, probably The Middle, but yeah, Sweetness grabbed me. Like I just fell in love with that song and that's probably when I started really seeking them out.
That's what I hear from a lot of people. I mean, I think wasn't a Praise Chorus?
Yes, that was their, according to Wikipedia, it was their fourth single. came out in October of 2002.
And, wow.
Yeah, they started with their first single, Bleed American, in September of 2001, and then finished out with their fourth one, A Praise Chorus, in 2002.
Four singles is pretty impressive.
That,
you know,
really
when you
is.
Think about how competitive the airwaves were back then for acts like that.
Right.
So that, I mean, that's pretty impressive that they got four singles out that all got pretty good circulation and kept them, you know, that's over a year. If Praise Chorus was 2002 hitting the airwaves, that's quite a success story. And that's kind of the story of that album, Bleed American. You know, the background to that is they had gotten kicked off of their label at the time, which was Capitol, due to the rather poor performance and poor promotion, I should really say, of Clarity, which here's a tangent, because I don't know how much time you or I want to spend on Clarity, but that is such a beloved album. It just seems like it's very much a musician's sort of album, I guess, in the way that people really admire it, perhaps admire it more than they actively enjoy it, I don't know. But and just so influential for what would become, I guess, the, you know, for better or worse, the emo kind of scene. Like every contemporary act of Jimmy Eat World, when they talk about, you know, what was a big influence for you, what was the game changer, they're like, oh, Clarity. It's Clarity. You just hear that from everybody. It was just that much of a mission statement from this band. And, you know, that came out in 99. Of course, the critical darling, but underperformed. So Capitol sort of left them twisting in the wind. And they decided to go it alone. And, you know, they were without a label when they produced Bleed American.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it just took off like a rocket. I mean, that was just, you know, far beyond their expectations, I'm sure. But it was kind of like they needed a hit, and that was kind of a make or break moment for them, was the success of Bleed American. Like if that hadn't have taken off, they might have been sunk.
It's funny you mentioned Clarity that way, because I remember, I don't remember exactly what I bought. It was back when CDs were way more expensive and back before Amazon was such a thing, or maybe it didn't even exist. But at some point when I searched out to get Clarity, because I heard so many good things about it, I paid way too much for it. We're talking about like $18 or so.
I was about to ask, was it like $18.99 or something?
Yeah, it was one of those FYE or Sam Goody, that I had to go there because it wasn't in Walmart where I got most of my music. And I remember I paid so much for it, so it made me even madder when it didn't connect with me. Like, I've heard the whole album, but probably rarely in one sitting, and probably no more than three times. Like, it just doesn't grab me.
Yeah. I know. I don't know what it is. And within, like, the Jimmy Eat World fan community, especially at the time, like 2001, 2002-ish, that was all you ever heard about, were people being so obsessed and so into Clarity and being disappointed that Bleed American was like not another Clarity.
Right.
And so, I mean, that kind of turned me off, you know, because it was, Bleed American was just such an entry point, I feel like, for so many people. And it goes back to what you were saying before, when a band takes off, you have like the really diehard devotees who have been there from the beginning are like, oh, the sellout, now that it's popular, it sucks, and just that whole thing. And I mean, Jimmy Eat World are so not that at all. They evolved as a band, of course, but I don't think they ever sacrificed their integrity, which may be an unusual way to put it, considering their most recent album is called Integrity Blues.
Right.
Yeah. And so just whatever appeal they held in the first place, whatever people responded to, I think, from the beginning, whenever you discovered them, whether it was Clarity or Static Prevails or even something before that, potentially. I don't think they ever lost that. It just it grew in size, and it took on a different form, and yes, became more popular. We can get into like what it is that I feel like people responded to and why the middle in particular was as successful as it was, but
sure.
It's so surprising, I think, to a lot of folks that Jimmy Eat World had been around as long. You want to talk about being in the game and sticking it out? I mean, they formed as a band when they were kids. I mean, young teenagers. In the like early 90s, 93, 94 was when they released their original self-titled. And it basically sounds like a whole album of something a bunch of kids would do when they're farting around.
Right. I can only imagine how many of these bands like that, you know, do that. There's so few that have a really good album when they're in their teens. There are obviously exceptions, but I'd say most don't.
And yet they were just in the trenches, and they were at it for so long. And as I said, that first album is mercifully out of print. It will cost you a pretty penny if you want to try to track it down on eBay or something, as I did about 10 years ago, I want to say, because that's how obsessed I became. Not that I had any expectation it was going to be good. I just wanted to have it,
right.
You know. But yeah, it's the thing about the middle. I think that the secret to the success there is it sort of cuts across the sort of typical demographic lines of these sort of emo artists that you think of these like dopey sort of angsty white kids I don't mean to be that sort of way about it, but that's just sort of their audience,
right?
For these emo bands, which Jimmy Eat World, they're kind of like pioneers in that second wave emo thing in the mid 90s. But I think because they were able to craft this song that appealed to like so many young girls, that it was like, okay, now they've really broadened their reach, and they're reaching people that their peers are really not able to. Not there's anything wrong with having a niche, but they were able to expand their scope. And I'm just so impressed by that. And like I said, grateful for the success of that song for paving the way to so many other things.
Oh, yeah. Now, are there any other tracks off the album that really grab you? Because I have a ton off this one. Like, going back through it last night, and I'd forgotten a couple of maybe not completely forgotten, but yeah, I guess maybe. I hadn't thought about it in a long time anyway.
Like, Authority song I really like. I mean, it's not a John Mellencamp cover.
Right.
Get It Faster.
Yes.
Which is, as good as that is on the album, I love hearing that live. That is such a jamming song just to rock out to live. That breakdown is just killer. They have a lot of good solos and breakdowns like that. But that one was one that really grabbed me. I'm glad that you reminded me of this, because just, man, top to bottom, there is so much good stuff on that.
Cautioners is one of the most bizarre. It has a weird flow to it, but I like it. The drums don't get to do a whole lot, at least not early in the song, but it's such a cool song.
That's right. Oh, man. Yeah, I love Cautioners, and it tells such a great story. I don't know. I'm kind of a lyrics guy when it comes to music, and maybe that's part of why Jimmy Eat World registers with me so intensely. When I when I would get a new CD, like I would go home and my preferred, and this may sound just awful to a lot of people, and I don't blame them at all, but my preferred way of listening to music would be crack open the CD, you know, pop it in my Walkman at the time, get my headphones on and start flipping through and literally reading the liner notes as I'm listening to it.
Yeah.
Because I want to know, like, the, you know, so many lyrics are kind of, you can't make out what they're saying, right? Half the time.
There are so, a lot of albums I can remember having no clue what they said for so many years before, you know, there was Google and everything.
Which makes for some very funny interpretations sometimes, I'll grant you. But I wanted to understand, like, what I was hearing. And I would get so mad when a CD would not have lyrics in their liner notes. I would be like, well, this just sucks. Like, how am I, again, before you can go online and just look stuff up. But, yeah, that was definitely, I mean, I can remember doing that with Bleed American and just getting super into Cautioners. That's a great one.
If you really like are wanting the more mellow thing, I know Hear You Me and If You Don't are like just two of my favorites of the more mellow style of the album.
Oh, yep. If You Don't is a lot of fun.
If I just want to get mellow and I really maybe want to think about feelings a little more than maybe I should, though, either one of those work really well. Like, I mean, still, like, I can be driving and like my mood changes a little bit when those come on. Not like in a bad way, but like it just, it just, I don't know, it makes me feel. As the young people say, puts me in my feels.
Yeah, it gives you the feels. That's
yeah. but that's what those songs do for me, and that's really cool.
Hear You Me wasn't officially a single, but you started hearing that all over the place too, like in a lot of movies, and it's sort of it's a sad song. It's based on. Do you know the background to that?
I don't. I actually. I think I had a bootleg of this one, possibly. So I don't think I looked at the lyrics of it.
It's apparently it was sort of a tribute to these two fans that were very supportive of Jimmy Eat World, and I think primarily Weezer, and just a lot of these type of bands that were coming up. You know, hitting the road really hard and just trying to carve out any sort of existence back then. This again would be like the mid 90s, and they would just avail themselves to these bands so much, like going above and beyond just being super fans. They seem like really great people. Like they would put them up in their houses and just, you know,
that
kind of thing. And I can't for the life of me remember what their names were, but in any case, these I think there were a couple. I'm not entirely sure of that, but they died in a car accident, and it was sort of like, oh man, just hit everybody really hard. So that was sort of the inspiration to that song, which you hear, like I said, you hear in a lot of movies and TV shows and stuff now. But man, I
could tell it was a deep song, but I'd never looked up really what it was about. I just knew what it meant to me, and I guess sometimes with music, that's more what I do. Like I have the times where I go and look at the CDs, and I still do that some to look at the lyrics. My first really angry that they didn't have the full lyrics in it was Metallica's Reload. They had just like maybe two sentences worth of lyrics listed and then like some crazy picture, and that was it.
And that's so not like, going to cut it.
Right. I'm like, what are these words? I have no clue. How can I understand him? So I'm just like making up my own words to it because I couldn't read along. But
yes.
Albums that had the full listing I always loved. But yeah, sadly, Bleed American wasn't one of those with me. Still at that age, I did not have frequent work enough to buy a whole lot of albums.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, and that's the other thing that doesn't get talked about a lot. With very limited income, that was certainly and a lot of other interests. Like, all my money went to comics. Let's be real. That's just how it was for me growing up. So, hey, with unlimited means and disposable income, I maybe could have come into my love for music, and a lot of these conversations could be very different, but it is what it is. I'm happy with my choices.
Oh, understandable. With me, if it had not been for college internet and things such as Kazaa, I wouldn't have gotten to listen to a lot of the stuff that I later would go and buy because I liked it so much. But like back then, albums were so expensive that in high school anyway, that it was hard to get a lot of this stuff. So, and it was before the days of Spotify that you could go on YouTube or Spotify and listen to all these songs. So I would, check them out a little bit on there, and I'm like, if it's really good, I'm going to go buy it. So I did that with a lot of albums, but yeah, 2001, no, I didn't.
Right.
My allowance
story
got spread, very slim, or my work money had a lot of places I had to go. So, that wasn't one I was able to get right away. But I heard it. Like I said, thanks to friends or taping things off the radio or whatever, I did that a ton growing up too.
Yes. Well, is there anything else from Bleed American that really jumps out at you?
No, it always takes me back to either late high school, early college. Like that, just I can't help but think about what was going on at that time, and that's just. And I'm not going to get into that. Not the most interesting. In the world.
Well, that's. And, I'm glad you did. You mentioned that because there's another album where it's just so evocative when you hear these songs of the time and place. And,
right. Futures with you, is that how that one does to you, or was there something else?
Well, that one not so much.
Okay.
Futures being the follow up, of course, to Bleed American, and it's weird. That's another, it seems like, entry point for a lot of people. If they know Jimmy Eat World, it seems to be either because of Bleed American or Futures.
Right.
And I felt like at the time of its release, which Futures came out in 2004, that it felt pretty divisive, but nowadays is like super, like, I don't want to say beloved, but everybody's like, oh yeah, Jimmy Eat World, Futures, that was great. And I'm kind of like, really? Not that I dislike it, but my experience was giving myself demo-itis. So what happened was, before the release of Futures, they performed a few of the songs that eventually landed on Futures live. And I took such a liking to the live versions of these that once I heard them on the album, I was kind of,
Okay. I can see that.
And I'm trying to think of what the songs were.
Would it have been the first singles like Pain and Work and stuff
like
that?
They were not.
Okay.
They were not, which there's sort of a unusual story to how those came about, too. But the ones that, what were the live ones that I remember? Kill was the big one.
Okay.
It was a live performance of Kill that killed. I'm sorry for that. But, I mean, it did. It was phenomenal. There was like this build-up at the beginning with just percussion, and it was like this kind of epic-sounding song. And then on the album, it's like, well, this is fine, but it is not what I was anticipating. Nothing Wrong was one of them, which that didn't change too much from that's pretty straightforward, just kind of rock out type song.
It's one that stood out to me on my re-listen. I made a note of it. Nothing more than just the name, but I just like that was one that really grabbed me a ton on this most recent listen.
Yeah, I mean, I dig it. I do like that a lot. I think World You Love was, that didn't change too much, and I know there's one other that I'm forgetting, but anyway, it was just sort of like, I can remember the thought I had at the time, listening to Futures, the album, that I thought it seemed overproduced to me, like I'm qualified to give that assessment, I mean, this kind of snobbish then 20-year-old. Gosh, wow. I guess I would have been 21, I think. But it was just sort of like, and it was packaged. There was a deluxe version where mm-hmm. you got Futures, the album proper, with another CD of the demo versions of those same songs. And so, like, those were a little bit closer. I mean, they were more raw, of course, because they're demos. But somewhat a closer approximation of the versions of these songs that I got more attached to. And that's my own fault. I mean, it really is. So I kind of, like, set myself up for failure with that one. And there were other aspects of Futures that make me think what could have been. They ended up splitting with their longtime producer, which was Mark Trombino.
Oh, okay.
He did Bleed American, Clarity. I cannot remember if he did Static Prevails or not. But they started production on Futures with him and ended up going in a different direction. But later on, another set of demos surfaced that was essentially what it would have been with Mark Trombino. And there was an EP that was released somewhat shortly after Futures called Stay On My Side Tonight.
Yes, yeah.
And it is amazing. I think that's pound for pound, like, my favorite thing they've done. I love that EP. And that contained, like, the three big songs that otherwise would have been on, like, a Mark Trombino-produced version of Futures.
Okay, I never knew the story behind that. I bought it because by that point I was in love with Futures, and I finally had working money so I could buy some stuff. And mm-hmm. But I never knew the story of it. I wondered why it was just a little small EP to come out. So that makes sense.
I mean, you want to talk about mood and emotion and how evocative a song can be, like the song Disintegration on, and not, we're not doing The Cure here, but here again. But that's the first song on Stay On My Side Tonight. I mean, I go back and forth a lot on what my, like, favorite Jimmy Eat World song is. That is always in the conversation. So, but yeah, like the singles from Futures, Pain and Work, did not seem to be part of the original plan for that. They sort of came along later, which makes sense.
Because, oh, those are radio singles. That's, you know, uh-huh. Rock radio is written all over those. I like those songs, but you hear those and you know somebody's pushing them. Like, okay, dude, you want this to get played on rock radio?
Yeah. Do you like those as singles better than any of the stuff from Bleed American?
Oh, that's a good question. I honestly don't know. I think I always will go back to Bleed American as my favorite, but Futures mm-hmm. was a close follow-up for me. As far as which one I prefer, it'd be really hard to say, but as singles, Pain is really strong to me. Like, Pain yeah. really, it hits with me. It hits all the right notes with me. So I definitely like that better than The Middle.
I started to say Pain might be my least favorite of their singles, but I'm like, well, no, I like it better than The Middle. I like it well enough as a song. I don't have a problem with it. It's just, I think they've had very strong singles. That one, not as high in my estimation as some of their others, but it's just, I think it's just part of that. My somewhat mixed feelings on Futures, which have softened over time. I mean, I've kind of gotten over some of that stuff from my early 20s.
Right.
But,
Gil Norton did this album, which I'm a...
Yes.
I mostly know him for his work with the Foo Fighters, but that's mm-hmm. I'm looking at right now. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt like a big deal. He felt like kind of a big get, and it felt like a big deal when they made that switch. But it was sort of, there's kind of some turmoil just in terms of, well, what does this mean? Like, I mean, Futures was so hotly anticipated as the follow-up to Bleed American, and it just seemed like for the longest time you're going, when is this album going to come out? When's it going to come out? And, I mean, it was 3 years later, but that's not unusual for them. It is somewhat unusual for maybe other bands that have, like, kind of that two-year release schedule, which seems pretty typical for these somewhat mainstream artists. But
that's really tough to do if you tour at all afterwards. Like, you put
I feel
album,
like it must be. Yeah.
I mean, pretty much you have to be recording demos on your bus or whatever, or your van or whatever you might be in, to possibly have anything new to go record real quick and then get back on the road. Like, that would be insane. Like, I think three is an ideal, I would say. Now, people like Goo Goo Dolls in more recent years, I know they go a long time between albums. And I don't know if that's family or what that is that does that to them. But to me, that might be a little too long because some people will have forgotten about you by then.
That's right.
But, you know, not us long-term fans. But three seems ideal. Would you have any other thoughts on Futures before we move on to another one?
Not so much, other than I'm such a nerd that I have my own kind of ideal version of Futures, which consists of, like, what I think are the best songs from Futures, plus the Stay On My Side Tonight EP, plus a couple of B-sides that came out from the Futures sessions.
Okay.
There's a song called Shame. That's a B-side. I think it was on, like, the Pain single was how you could get it back then, assuming you didn't just download it.
Right.
But that's a pretty cool song. And, again, has one of those great, like, breakdowns in the middle. Maybe my favorite of their breakdowns, actually. But if that's a song that if you haven't heard and you like the band, you might think, oh, where has this been all my life?
I'm going to have to check that out. I don't think I've heard that one. It looks like I was looking on Spotify and it had a bunch of demos on the version I was listening to last night, but I don't see that.
It may be tricky to... You could probably just find it on YouTube, to be honest.
I'm sure I can. I was just looking just then because it's listed as a UK additional track.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, I ended up...
Well, and the Japanese...
Yes, that's the form that I actually have it in, which, again, speaks to how much of a nerd that I am. I heard the, because it was like a demo version of it that was on the single, and then, like, there was a full album version on the actual Japanese deluxe edition of Futures. So I imported that bad boy, and, that was a situation where I was actually much happier with the fully produced album form of this song. So, yeah, you might come across both a demo and a proper studio version of Shame.
Nice. Well, would you be opposed to taking a quick break real quick and then jumping back in after?
I would not be opposed at all.
Okay.
Seems like a good break point.
Okay. Well,
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Sunday Groove. Yeah, I brought back the rock voice for the second half. Yeah.
Ooh. All right. Can't do that very long or I will blow out that voice. Tim is still with me. But I have a question I have to ask before we continue with Jimmy World.
Okay.
What'd you have to kill Jesse for? What'd you have to kill Jesse for?
Not going to respond to that comment.
That's Sling Blade for anybody that hadn't ever seen the movie, which if you haven't, be ashamed. That is a very good movie, very classic movie. I love doing that voice, but it kills my voice all the time.
Oh, good times, though.
That was stuck in my head for like a long time after a friend's wedding not too long ago, and I just kept... I think that was the line I got stuck on. Like, just saying on repeat.
Didn't that just happen? Yeah, you get stuck on something. And
I think that's what got stuck on my head the first time I saw the movie. Because that was just so unexpected. As I saw that movie at my uncle's house. My mom did not realize how adult the movie was. And even though I was old enough to watch it, she wouldn't have probably been okay with it otherwise.
Okay.
But anyway, sorry. That's not what we're here for. I just wanted to see if I could get a little unexpected laugh. So we left off on Futures. I will say one last thing about it for real, though. That album that I'm doing it to myself, it really does evoke the feelings again. And I think that's just because of the college thing. I think as everybody does, we have a certain fondness for college years. Easily my favorite times of life, even though I went through a lot of crap during it. And that album was actually, I think, one of my good recovery albums after a breakup. So
okay.
it evokes some of the good and bad of that. But it's a I really, really like the album a lot.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like it has a reputation for being sort of darker and moodier than it really is. I mean, there are, I'm thinking of, gosh, there's a song on it called Drugs or Me.
Right.
Which you can't get a lot heavier than that. which it, I kind of like the song, but it,
I
it,
do too.
It definitely goes there. But I mean, outside of that, it's not a super, super dark album, but I think people think of it that way maybe because of the place and time when they encountered it, when it was originally released back in 04, because like you said, you're in college, you're going through things like breakups and just major stress and everything else, and it taps into that vein, I think. But I, compared to what it could have been, again, this is in my own headcanon, that would have been a, you talk about a brooding album. Holy crap.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, it's just remembered that way, I think, for a lot of people, and I can see why.
Yeah. Well, the follow-up, I know, came out in 2007. Is that correct, Chase This Light?
Yep, 2007.
What are your feelings on that? I will actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to go quick on that. That one, I have only in recent years experienced because
okay,
my first listens of it, or at least what I heard off of it, didn't hit me the same way Futures did. So that's not mm-hmm. at all said to influence your opinion, of course, but I just, that was one that I kicked myself for not listening to until very recent years, and is one that thanks to Spotify I was able to refamiliarize myself with last night or the night before. I can't remember. It was very recent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. You talk about knowing where you were in your life at the time you heard something. I don't know why it stands out so much, but I was in a really bad mood the
okay.
first time I heard this, and I don't remember the circumstances at all, but I really should have set it down and not listen to it when I did, because I think it poisoned me a little bit against this album, which was unfair, because I've come around on this one a lot more than I have on like Futures, which don't get me wrong, I've made my peace with Futures, but I'm still a little bit mixed on a lot of the songs there. But Chase This Light deserved better than I gave it in my initial assessment, I think. You've got as the big single from that song called Big Casino, which I really dig that mm-hmm. as their singles go. Like I was super into that. You also had, was Let It Happen a single? I think it was.
It was the third one, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, I don't remember that getting as much play. And it's funny, there was a song called Always Be mm-hmm. that I hated the first time I heard it. I mean, I don't know why, it just hit me wrong, and I hated that song. And I really love it now. I made a complete 180 on that one. And just other stuff there doesn't. There's not a lot of super standout stuff. Dizzy is kind of interesting. I think that's maybe my strongest installment on Chase This Light. It's the last track, mm-hmm. and it sort of feels like almost like a spiritual successor to 23 from Futures. Was also a really solid, like, standout song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, they just seem similar in their structure and their themes a little bit. I will say I think Chase This Light has their worst song of their kind of mainstream studio output in Here It Goes. That sounds like a some kind of warped disco acid trip gone really bad.
I've got to look. Maybe that didn't play last night on Spotify, because I don't remember anything that at all resembled that coming out.
Okay. I just think of it as the song that really sucks.
Okay.
And here again, there are things that, like, there are some B-sides that came out of that that I hold in higher esteem than some of the album tracks. A song called Be Sensible. Very much worth tracking down, again, if you're a big fan of Jimmy Eat World. And a song called Open Bar Reception.
I was laughing at that one a second ago, that I saw that list, and I'd never seen that before.
That's sort of a fun one. Gosh, now you got me thinking of some of these B-sides. There was one that did not make the American release of Bleed American. Have you heard Splash Turn Twist?
I think so. Wasn't that in a movie, possibly, or...?
It may have been, actually. It's very poppy. It would be very much of a piece with stuff on Bleed American, I think. It was on international releases, but not the American release. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's we've already gone down that road. But yeah, now I'm like, oh gosh, there's all these singles that I wish had been on, or these B-sides that I wish had been on the album. But yeah, my appreciation for Chase This Light has really grown over the years, and I'm glad, because I just didn't give it a fair shake first time I heard it.
I know I sure didn't. Like, so that wasn't when I purchased, because I don't have a clue which song it was I heard off of it, but when it didn't, I'm a big rock fan, like hard rock, and so, like, you know, Kill and Pain and stuff like that had, like, just that more rock and groove, and when I heard a much mellower overall album, I didn't want it. Like, that wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so at the time, I just overlooked it, and I remember in recent years, a friend was just like, you've got to give that album a chance. Like, knowing mm-hmm. what I like in music, they're like, you will like it. And as I've gotten older, I appreciate the softer moments better in music than I used to. Used to be, I wanted what rocks. Like, that's...
yeah. Well, and Chase This Light is almost syrupy sweet in its kind of pop appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think deliberately so. That's an artistic choice they made going into that. But tonally, it is quite different from Futures and Bleed American. So, and that's fine.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels that way, because I definitely, like I said, that wasn't one I'd never talked to a super fan as far as their feelings on that one. But I did have one friend that was into it a good bit and got me to go back. And it looks like somewhere there's also a Bruce Springsteen cover on there, Take 'Em Easy As They Come.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I've never heard
that. They did a Springsteen cover. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, lyrically, you're like, okay, I see how that's a Bruce Springsteen song, which, I mean, it's not one I had heard of his or that I was familiar with.
It doesn't sound familiar at all to me.
No, it's pretty, it's pretty neat.
Cool. Well, I know from our previous conversation, a lot of this we didn't talk about beforehand. That's for listeners. Obviously, you know what we talked about. but I know Tim had said originally that he really gravitated to one in particular by Jimmy Eat World, like more so than some of the others, and that would be 2010's Invented. What are some
that's
of
right.
your thoughts on that, and maybe the reason behind why it grabs you so much?
I don't know what it is. It's Invented, and this is... I know it probably sounds strange coming from someone. I mean, not that I'm the biggest fan of Jimmy Eat World that's ever been. I didn't start out with them when they started out. I came in after they'd been around for a while. You know, Bleed American being my entry point, like it is for a lot of folks. But it's just odd to me that an album kind of deep into their catalog ended up being my favorite. And when I say favorite, like, hands down, that's not a difficult choice for me. And I have never heard anyone else who is even kind of a fan of this band say that about Invented.
I definitely have it. That's why I was really actually excited when you said that the other day. I was like, that's so cool. Like, I want to hear that. Like, why that, you know, or what it is about it. Because I like the album. It's so different than the stuff most of the stuff I've heard of theirs, but I really
Maybe
like it.
Maybe that's what it is. After I heard it the first time, I set it down and I said, that might be my favorite Jimmy Eat World album. And I put it out of my mind. I said, there's no way. Like, after, you know, three you know, really previous solid installments that I'm really familiar with. You know, I've gone into their back catalog. I even have a lot of appreciation for Static Prevails, which some people might consider somewhat unique.
I still need to check that out. I don't think I've ever heard anything off of it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There's a lot of talk about production. There's a lot of very cool layering on Static Prevails. Yeah. Some of those little choices are, they were not really that fully formed, I think, as a band at that stage. But I like a lot of stuff on that. But anyway, with Invented, it just seemed like song after song, I'm like, I really dug that. I really dug that. And they're like the weakest link on that album is still really strong to me. And at the end of the day, I was like, there's nothing on that feels skippable, that I would like not play through. And it seems like almost a light concept album in the way that it's constructed. Very similar themes that seem to be explored throughout those songs. Jim Adkins said that it was the deepest into character writing that they had ever done. This is, yeah, and it's not like the typical kind of autobiographical type of songs that you see from a lot of artists that draw from their own experience, I think. I believe they were trying to do something very different and outside of their own worldview. You have a lot of almost like gender swapping where there are songs on Invented that are very much delivered from like a female point of view, even though, you know, it's Jim Adkins singing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of flips it in a way that I'm like, oh, this takes on an entirely different meaning than it would otherwise. So I think that really appealed to me. And it's a very simple kind of thing, but it packs a big punch for me.
I know it's one of the albums that has a female single and several songs with them, at least at parts.
Yes. Yes, there's a woman that toured with them. I don't want to... Courtney Marie Andrews. And Rachel Hayden, or Haddon, perhaps it's Haddon, does some backing vocals as well. So just everything on that really, really registered with me. And this is going to be the, like the wangstiest thing I've ever said, but if I can't say it on a podcast talking about Jimmy Eat World, the quintessential emo band, then I don't know where else I could say it. I like can't listen to this album anymore. I like it so much. It just, again, puts me back in that same place and time so profoundly that, and it reminds me of, it's like a good memory, but one that I sort of don't want to revisit because it's almost painful now. Just the way things have changed, and it's, you know how nostalgia can be really bittersweet?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And we're talking about something, well, 2010 is now, you know, we're down talking 8 years ago, but I don't know what the statute of limitations on nostalgia is. I mean, I certainly don't think of myself as being nostalgic for a lot of things from what seems to me that recently ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just one of them that I don't really like going back to because I'm like, it's not really like that anymore. Like, I can't enjoy it in the same way, I guess. I don't know. I played this nonstop. It was just constantly in my rotation for a good 2-year period, I would say. That's how into it I got.
Wow, okay. Well, I see one thing that the album had going for it that probably hit with you a little bit was Mark Trombino came back.
He did. Like. That's true.
That's cool.
Maybe that's what it is. I've questioned myself. Am I am I really that big a fan of this band, or is it like their major longtime producer who seemed to get the best out of them? I don't know.
Well,
so that's a little conflict.
It's so different, and that's one thing I like about it. And I didn't hear this until, I'm going to say maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Like, when I say, like, I loved Lead American in Futures and the, what was that EP again?
Stay on My Side.
Stay on
Tonight.
My Side. Yeah, and I was so into those. And so when I didn't get grabbed immediately by Chase the Light, like, I just kind of went aside for a long time and actually did not actually hear it until, if I recall, until Damages came out was when I first.
Okay.
So I, when I wanted to go back and listen to it because I heard it was a stark contrast from it. So
I think that I'll go ahead and say I think that My Best Theory is my favorite of their singles. That grabbed me by the balls. I mean, it just did. The first time I heard it, I was like, okay, Jimmy Eat World is back. It reminds me of Bleed American in a lot of ways, but I think I like it more. I mean, just going down the list, Evidence is a wedding doodle of a song, and even better live. I saw them live on the Invented Tour in 2011, so it was a few months after the album had come out. And, I mean, that's my favorite concert experience easily.
Nice.
And so, I found myself questioning, like, am I turning into one of those fans that, you know, like, when I came into my fandom of Jimmy Eat World, these guys that were holding them to account for everything not sounding like Clarity, and now I'm like, if subsequent albums are not like Invented, am I still gonna like them? I mean, that's how much it was just cemented in my mind as like, okay, this is everything to me. Gosh, just looking at this again, in terms of favorite songs, you know, from their entire catalog, the song Invented might be it for me.
It's good. It's really good.
I think it's just so much the band in a nutshell. I mean, I say in a nutshell, it's a 7-minute song. But that's a lot of what they do, where they have these longer songs that sort of aren't afraid to stretch their legs out. They kind of does that quiet, loud thing where it goes into some kind of light instruments and then just this thundering sort of crescendo that they come at, they come back with. I go for that. it hits the right buttons.
Cool. Yeah. That one did stand out to me in most recent listen. And Action Needs an Audience. It's just a good rockin' song. I feel to me it's the got the best riff, like as far as more rockin' of any of the stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I definitely feel as a whole the album's more inventive and, well, of course, but it's subdued overall. Pretty heavily produced at times, but then other times it does kind of feel almost raw. It's bizarre to say that thing, but as far as the more subdued songs, I like Coffee and Cigarettes. I really like that one.
Sure.
I think that's one that you hear the female on a lot more too, I think.
You do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that's one thing I love about this album, because I've always loved male-female vocals. Like, I just think that's so cool to either be harmonizing or just, I don't know, blending somehow.
Yes, that is a good example of that. Action Needs an Audience is sung by Thompson, their guitarist.
Well, it does sound different now that you say that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, he was their lead vocalist, like, starting out. Jim would have a few songs here and there, but I'm thinking, like, again, going back to Static Prevails, most of those I think are done by Tom. There may be a little bit of a back and forth, but he had not done lead vocals since Clarity. I think Blister was the last song that he was lead vocalist on. So it was nice to kind of throw him a bone again. And I don't know why they made that decision to sort of swap roles like that, but to get, I mean, Jim is kind of the better singer, I think that was just their kind of their preference.
Hey, it's not as extreme as Goo Goo Dolls, though.
Oh yeah,
that is one of those that if it goes, if they change singers, you know it like immediately. Sorry, not to keep going back to that. I just that's one of those that you get both two singers in the band, and you're like, whoa, that's
no,
a huge
right.
difference.
I forgot about that. Yep. And just I'm looking at this again. Cut is a very sort of goes there type of song. Very aptly named. And Mixtape is kind of a cool sort of mellow, it's like a cool down song to go out on. Again, kind of lengthier, which several tracks on this seem to be. It also has 12 tracks, which is more than most of their albums. But I don't know, I feel like people sort of overlooked this, and maybe it's just me, but I went in not knowing what to expect. It was total opposite of my experience with like Futures, where I had it all mapped out in my head. It had to be this one thing, and it wasn't, so it sucked. Totally different story with this. It was kind of like, oh yeah, okay, got another Jimmy Eat World album coming out. Heard that first single, was like, whoa. And then the album, I could not put it down.
Nice.
And I don't know what else to say. It's like I just have to gush with praise over it. And it's just, and I don't, again, go back to these songs much now. I don't want to ruin it for myself.
Okay. Well, you know, it's funny, like, even me, you know, I chose to do a music podcast, but there's sometimes I can't explain why I love something. I just do. I mean, sometimes music just speaks to you and you really don't even know why.
Mm-hmm. It's now preserved in amber for me.
Right. Did something happen audibly? You sound a lot louder for some reason. Did I do something or?
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm getting a little feedback in my own ear.
Maybe I might have done that. Looks like I somehow boosted the volume all the way up. That's weird. But I moved something. All right. Does it sound normal to you again?
Does it sound? Yes, it sounds normal to
okay.
me again.
Yeah, somehow I knocked the volume all the way up on my headphones, so I guess that's would be why okay. you got louder. Okay.
You had to boost my enthusiasm for invented.
That's funny. I've never done that before, not while recording.
I think I just really responded to a lot of the, again, the themes throughout these songs. There's a lot of sort of like a wanderlust sort of quality, if that makes any sort of sense, where, you know, you're kind of still trying to figure things out in your life, but things are good. Like, you're comfortable, and you're not exactly where you want to be, but you're putting in the work to get there, and you think it's going to pay off, and you're having just very interesting experiences, and it's almost like a meditative thing for me, where there's like a, you know, you want to achieve like a state of mindfulness when you meditate, right?
Right, right.
And I don't know. I don't know that I've ever really been able to achieve that in my practices otherwise, but maybe as close to it as just the state that this album has put me in. State of euphoria, as it is, yes. as you were.
Well, cool. I know I don't have any other thoughts on it other than just it's a good album that people should give a chance, even if they haven't previously. So let's move on to Damage. What's your thought on 2013's Damage?
Okay, I don't like Damage as much as...
right.
It's kind of middle of the road for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have super deep thoughts on it, honestly. It was described as, Jim Adkins described it as an adult breakup album, which I can see, but at the same time, I'm sort of like, it's not entirely, I don't see how it's more so that than like a lot of other stuff that they've done.
Right, right.
I mean, that's a lot of their catalog, it seems like. So, you know, if that was his mission statement, sure, yes, I see it. Maybe not that much stronger than other stuff. There's not a lot on here that I actively dislike, but not a ton of standouts either. I don't remember hearing the single from this, I Will Steal You Back. I don't know that I ever really heard that on the radio, which was felt odd, but yeah. It was just sort of like, 'cause I know that it was in rotation. Other people talked about, hey, I heard this, but not so much in my market. But yeah, Book of Love is a song I would say I actively dislike. not that it's horrible, it just does nothing for me. Appreciation, the opening track is pretty strong. Title track as well. Another kind of goes there sort of song where you almost over relate to it. Easy for me to say. But yeah, I think this one just it's fallen into that period of as I've gotten older, nothing's really gonna connect with me like probably Invented did. That was sort of the peak, and now we're sort of coming down a little bit from that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I still like a lot of stuff on here. Just I'm not as opinionated about it as I am others. What did you think?
I like it, but I know I don't know where my friend Keith heard about this album. Like as far as what he heard about it, but I think he heard an interview or something. And he heard it described as a kind of rawer and more rockin' mm-hmm. album, and it is definitely rawer than Invented, but it's not as rockin' as you would think.
True.
As coming back from Invented, which was, you know, way more subdued and so creative. I like it, but there's not a ton that stands out to me on it, honestly. When I revisited it, I wasn't really able to make a whole lot of notes for it because I like it, but I don't have very strong feelings on it.
It really kind of just speaks for itself. There's not a lot of reading between the lines and the the lyrics on these type of songs, and you cannot accuse this album of being overproduced. That's for sure.
No,
it is more stripped down, no doubt. I should probably give it more of a listen than I tend to do. But it's kind of like once it came out, I did listen to it a lot, but once I got it out of my system, it was sort of out of my system.
Right. Well, and speaking of that, that's kind of how I feel about the new album.
Okay.
I mean, I like it. I think it... I don't know if I could do the damage or not. But
yeah.
It just... I don't know. What are your thoughts on Integrity Blues? It came out in 2016.
Yeah. I'm about the same.
There's a couple tracks that I love the crap out of on it. And I like Certain, which is the first single.
I really liked Sure and Certain to the point that when I heard it, again, here we are, the folly of expectations. When I heard Sure and Certain, I liked it so much that I said, okay, if that is representative of what we're going to hear on this album, then this could be like an all-timer for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I unfortunately, I don't think it's that representative. Not that what we got instead is bad, but I do kind of slot it in that same category as Damage, where it doesn't do a great deal for me. Still not a lot on here that I actively would skip, but I think it starts out really strong. That song You With Me,
yeah,
I really like the drum machine, man. That actually does get me going.
I didn't get the chance to go back through this one before this podcast, but I did. I'm going back to my Amazon list, the digital, because I bookmarked five of the songs off of it, and that is one that I bookmarked. So I know it definitely struck me.
And then it goes into Sure and Certain, which, okay, yep, already winner. And then, like, It Matters, I was like, eh. And then Pretty Grids, like, that middle stretch is just sort of, does pick back up with Get Right, which was another single, which I have heard on the radio. So that made me feel a little better, I think. And it does finish strong with somewhat oddly named Polar.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't think it was all that it could have been, but not a massive disappointment or anything. It was just sort of like, oh, I wanted it to be this, but it was that, and the alternative is all right, but that was not a direction I would have preferred them to take. It's funny, though, in reviews of Integrity Blues, like, it seems to be pretty well received, and it seems like a lot of the commentary on it has been like, oh, this is a return to form for Jimmy Eat World, and I'm like, really? That almost feels like a obligatory thing that music critics they have to say when they've slept on a band for a long time, and then, oh, we need to review Integrity Blues, the new Jimmy Eat World album, and, you know, for want of anything else to say, it just seems like that's a very go-to type of observation that I don't think is particularly true. Like, I don't see how this is any more a return to, like, what does that even mean? Okay, does it remind you of Clarity? Does it remind you of Bleed American? Because I don't think it's anything like.
No, it doesn't remind me
particularly.
Of, it definitely doesn't for me. I'm looking on Spotify. It looks like, I mean, it must have had a decent amount of success, or they were just trying to capitalize on the success, because they did a three-song acoustic version, Integrity Blues Acoustic. At least it's on Spotify. Have you heard that?
Yeah, there were some acoustic cuts from this that they're not remarkably better or anything than the album tracks, I don't think. But, they're about what you would anticipate.
Okay.
Worth checking out if you like those songs.
Right.
So, and I'm interested to see what they do from this point on. It feels like they're sort of getting to that point in their career where they could sort of churn out albums be like almost workmanlike and just, you know, fulfill label commitments or whatever. And part of me just sort of hopes that, I don't know, maybe they do one or two more and then hang it up. Which is a little bit sad, but they're just not the type of band that I want to hang around forever.
Right. You don't want them to be like the Rolling Stones or something like that.
No. Yeah, I mean, they're still very young. I think they're in their, I think the guys are in their early 40s at this point.
Yeah, I looked a second ago, and the lead singer's 42. So
that's not super old or anything, but, like, I don't want them to get into their 50s and be doing, some bands just aren't meant to get old. They just aren't. And yeah, I think they've got a few more in their system, and then it might make sense to call it a day, you know, and I would be okay with that.
Well, it's better than the alternative, you know, is putting out albums that don't resonate at all. There are plenty of those. They stay around forever, and you're, I don't know, it's just the music just stops altogether, grabbing you.
Yeah, no doubt. But that's Jimmy Eat World. I mean, like I said, the quintessential emo band, and that's a label that the evolution of it has been kind of funny, where I think when you're a little bit self-conscious, like when you're younger, like you don't want to be associated with, ew, it's emo, that really sucks. Gosh, that just that kind of angsty, you know, very navel-gazing sort of music. And it was like an albatross, you know, around any band's neck to be called emo. And you sort of actively dislike it and then try to ignore it, pretend like it isn't a thing, like deny, deny, deny. And then eventually it's just like, yeah, they're an emo band. It's cool.
Well, at least
it's all right to embrace these things.
Well, at least they're not one of the nasally voiced emo things, because you know there's the really whiny nasally voiced thing that some emos are associated with, and I would never consider them to be that.
No. They kind of kickstarted a lot of that, I think.
Right.
Its success in the early 2000s. Boy, you look at. Look at just pop or rock music in 2003. All American Rejects, remember them?
Oh, yes, I do.
Does anyone remember the Ataris? I mean, it's just...
Sadly, I do.
Okay. And I mean, not that they were horrible or anything.
Right,
it's
right.
Just there was a very sameness to that stuff that all just hit at the same time.
Well, you know, it always comes to like that, though. I mean, pop punk, you mentioned earlier, that kind of happened and had its big heyday for several years. And now, thankfully, it has died down because I don't hate, I mean, a lot of it I really like, but some of it's just like, oh my goodness, enough.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So, well, cool. Well, it's so funny. Like I know people that like Jimmy Eat World, but I've never met somebody that was their favorite band.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like I said, there's not a ton of bands that I would put into that category that I'm really into. But when I'm into them, I am super into them. So it's like just that hyper focus sort of thing. And yeah, Jimmy Eat World is tops in that.
Well, cool. Well, it's funny. I know we prepared for two bands. We've been going a long time. Just about 2 years old.
I'm sorry.
No. Don't be at all. I was actually going to call an audible and going to say, would you like to do a second appearance where we talk about Our Lady Peace? I know.
Sure. I mean, make it a two-parter.
Obviously, if you'd said no, I would just cut that out. But like, I just really, I love Our Lady Peace so much. I don't want to short them. At all.
Okay.
And so, I mean, other than that, it's going to be a length one. And I'm not at all criticizing that because I but I also feel I know my audience. I don't want to go too extremely long.
Oh, I understand.
So I know I said at the beginning of the episode I was trying a couple different things and the episode flow a little better. Like, I love the storytelling things, and that's why I've added in that, thanks to the producer, Todd Weber. Like, I really love starting the show kind of like that. I know he asked me music questions, and I don't know, that just, it was fun. But I did promise I was going to do a little follow-up on my previous episodes. And my last one, probably a kind of pretentious name, I never could come up with the name I wanted for it, and so I ended up going with Overlooked and Lesser Known Albums.
Okay.
And I had a guest on that was perfect for that, Jeremy Henderson. He is a huge music fan. That he is one that he listens to new music like constantly. Like, he is always on the search for new people and new bands. But I reached out and asked some other people, and I got a few people who give me impact or feedback on that. And Russell recommended Matic Gravity. That's Mad at Gravity, not Manic, which is probably what it sounded like I said.
Either one sounds kind of cool.
They are amazing. They are from the early 2000s. I would definitely recommend giving them a chance. Off the top of my head, trying to compare them to Jimmy Eat World, I mean, they're not them at all, but they do have the early 2000s sound, but it's a good thing. It lyrically is so cool, and there's one of the songs off of it that has such amazing alliteration that it really has always stood out to me more than the rest of the album. Actually, I could pull that up real quick. Uh, Well, would help if it... Anyway, if you're a fan of the band, you'll know what I'm talking about. I'm having trouble pulling it up, unless it's on my phone itself. Let's see, are you on there? I don't think you are. My Amazon, not pull that up. I guess Google would be the good thing to go to there. This is how the cheese is made.
Technology fails us sometimes when we need it most.
Well, it makes sense that it's not available on Amazon because they, I mean, they had a 2000 to 2003 life. Like, they were a very short-lived band, or Sam would say short-lived band.
Short-lived,
yes. I know that's worked into the Heart Traveling Fanboys lately. Okay.
Yes, I've adopted it in my lexicon, Will.
Are you going to tell me, Wikipedia, that you don't have an intense listing for... Oh, my goodness. It's not...
Oh, not even a Wikipedia article.
No! I mean, it does have an article, but it doesn't have the list of the songs. Oh, man, I'm kicking myself for this. Anyway, the whole album's on YouTube if you want to check it out. If you like it, go buy it digitally. I'm pretty sure you can do that. If you can't, then just YouTube it. But it's really good. I'm kicking myself for not remembering the names of the songs. And I have it on my computer, but it's not on my phone, so I can't pull it up readily. But then Greg mentioned Tom Petty, which, if you like Tom Petty, go back and listen to the episode with Todd. That was such a fun episode where we went really deep into his career. And but Greg mentioned one that we didn't talk much about because it wasn't one that struck Todd. And honestly... I don't have as much passion for it as I do the other ones, but that being said, it's incredible, and that is Highway Companion. And Greg mentioned that one is one that he thinks gets overlooked a lot, and he's right. Out of his solo albums, that one doesn't get a lot of love, and so I definitely recommend that one. Okay. Andy Helene, I'll mention him again, he actually mentioned Jellyfish, and I did not get a chance to listen to this before air, but he had mentioned them. He said they felt they were overlooked, and he mentioned both Split Milk or Spilt Milk. I'm not sure. And Belly Button. Let's see. That I know will be on.
They're one of those bands that Jellyfish, that you, if you know them, you know them. And if you don't, it's like, oh, okay. It sort of feels like a pretty cool find.
Yeah, I meant to that night and got sidetracked. I did write it down, so there's something. And then finally, this real thing, Jeremy Patrick Henderson again mentioned Small Houses is the name of the band. He gave me a link for it on my Facebook page, but it's the album Exactly Where You Wanted to Be. But it is a kind of more folksy Americana album, but it was really beautiful what I heard of it. And it didn't fall... into quite as more of the commercial ones, such as like Lumineers or Mumford & Sons. Not that I'm criticizing them. It just didn't feel quite like that, but it, I mean, that's the closest I can give to it. But it's a really good album verse. Do you have anything off the top of your head that that you really want to, that you think everybody should check out that they, if they, that's kind of overlooked like an album?
Invented by Jimmy.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Check that out if you ever look that one.
Well, cool. And then the other one I did never give any follow-up on was the soundtrack episode. And that was a really fun one. That was episode 6. But I had some... Jeremy also mentioned Ray, the movie, Spawn, Last of the Mohicans, Immortal Beloved, and The Matrix. And I mean, off the top of my head, Matrix, that takes me back to high school there. Trey Hamilton mentioned Batman, Pulp Fiction, and Lost Highway.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yep.
And I have not seen Lost Highway, so I'm going to have to check that out. Then Russell is bringing us back with The Crow.
The Crow soundtrack is so good.
It is. It is really good. And I was so
happy. That Cure song.
I'm trying to remember. I'm not as familiar with that one as he as most people are, but I do like it a lot. Batman and Robin, I love that soundtrack. That came on the heels of course, Batman Forever, and I thought that soundtrack was awesome as well. So I remember when Batman and Robin came out, like, I had to buy that soundtrack.
I'm not as familiar with that. I mean, everybody, I feel like, knows the Batman Forever soundtrack and likes it a lot better than the movie.
Right.
By a wide mile. What's on the Batman and Robin soundtrack?
I know Smashing Pumpkins, it bookends it, the beginning and the end of it.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Was that the one with R. Kelly song on it, I want to say?
That would make sense.
Let's see. I want to say that was the one he had, Gotham City. Such a cheesy song. That's not one that stands out to me. Here I am, like, saying it's a compliment. It is, but then I make fun of it. Sorry. I promised I wouldn't, and I still do occasionally. Whatever.
Can't help it.
Yes, Gotham City by R. Kelly. Oh, Look Into My Eyes by Bone Thugs and Harmony. I actually really like that one.
Wow.
Foolish Games by Jewel.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Lazy Eye by Goo Goo Dolls.
Those not Silver Sun Pickups.
No. yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Anyway, that's a good album. I'm glad Russell mentioned that. Elizabeth Town, Wedding Singer, Forrest Gump, even Greg brought in some love for Elizabeth Town, Forrest Gump, Guardians of the Galaxy, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Almost Famous, Jerry Maguire, Wedding Singer. Yes, another person with Wedding Singer. That was on mine. And then Drive. I remember that being a very lot electronic.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's great. Yep.
Did you like that movie?
I love that movie.
It's one I connected with a lot, and I bought it, but I have not ever gone back to watch it because it was one of those that I almost was afraid it wouldn't live up to my initial viewing of it. So,
I love that movie. I love all the music in that movie.
It fits it so well. It gives it such a unique feel. And then finally, our producer mentioned several as well, and that is Todd Weber. He did Singles, Pump Up the Volume, Empire Records, which is a great 90s soundtrack, Say Anything, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Oh, man. Away We Go, and Batman Forever. So, I was really happy to hear the different ones because I know about my episode on soundtracks, I didn't even go with like a top five. I just did five I like and brought in.
God, soundtracks just used to be so good.
They did. I remember buying like so many when they came out because the albums were so good. Like Elizabeth Town, I know Nick hates that movie. And honestly, not even sure if I like the movie or if I just love the soundtrack. Like I know it's a kind of artsy movie and it's depressing as can be. but that soundtrack is incredible. Actually was the first thing that got me really to fall in love with Elton John music. With a song I'd never heard, My Father's Gun. That was just an incredible song. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if anyone offered up Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Not that I recall. When I was going back through my social media last night to see if I'd left out anybody, I did not see that anywhere. That's a movie, embarrassingly, I've never seen all the way through. I wanted to so badly when it came out. Somehow it never happened. I like what I've seen.
It's a cute movie, I guess.
Well, I love Friends. And I guess so anything with Lisa Kudrow, I'll give a chance just about.
Sure, yeah. I guess I would also, I mentioned, the City of Angels soundtrack earlier. So yeah, not to be remiss in that. But yeah, I think, beyond that, everyone's mentioned the ones that really stand out to me, but that's a topic that could just probably produce endless episodes. Just there's so much.
I plan on it. I'm going to give it a little break between, but I do plan to go back to it. That's part of the reason why I approached it the way I did, because I picked two more recent movies that I thought just had phenomenal soundtracks that captured the feel of the movie, that I put them in within three of my favorites, because partly because I wanted to talk about those movies, and partly because I can't pick a top five. Like, hurts me to do top fives. One day, if it's requested, I might actually, really force myself to zero in on that, but I haven't yet.
I feel like it was discussed, but Godzilla?
it's so funny. Andy mentioned that as a joke. he posted that, like, he didn't even know I was about to do a soundtrack episode, and he posted that on my page, and it's so funny. Like, I love that soundtrack. Like, it shows its age for sure. I mean, the sounds of a Godzilla added into Brain Stew by Green Day. Like, I'd forgotten. I see Brain Stew reached, and I'd forgotten what the remix part was.
And, oh, I did too.
And when I started listening to it, I hear, I'm not even going to try to mimic it, but just those weird sounds. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. But it's a fun album. Like, I really like it. I like it for what it is.
Yeah, that's another one. Trash movie, great soundtrack.
Right. Well, I remember it had like some deep cuts. Like, it had a Foo Fighters song that had never been anywhere else.
That's right.
And I love it. I love it and hate it when that happens, because like, oh, I can easily go listen to those songs. But back then, it was just like, I hear this is out, but like, unless I go buy that $16 soundtrack, I don't have access to this song. So,
and you're supporting this garbage movie in a way.
I saw that in theaters too. I remember.
I did too.
And that was back when I didn't even see a ton of movies in theaters. So I don't know why that was something we saw, but we did. It has been a blast having you on here. I know when we were talking off air, like, until I'm bad at guessing how long it's going to take me to record anything. So originally I thought three bands, no, that won't be that bad, but then I'm really getting closer to it. It makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, if you have a long career, if it was a band with like two albums, then yeah, we could go through a lot of bands, but, otherwise, it's kind of hard to, so,
Well, most people who know me know that I can never shut up when it's something I care about. But I both apologize and thank you for not shortchanging any of this conversation, because I have had a blast as well.
Me too. It started hitting me like when we were getting to, I think, Damage. I was just like, man, it's like, I don't want to shortchange Our Lady of Peace either, though. It's like, I know I mentioned your shows at the top of the show, and I'll mention mine real quick. Twitter, Sunday Groove PTB, because Sunday Groove was taken already. That really irritated me. I'm like, Sunday's my last name. How dare somebody?
That's unfortunate. So
I'm like, you know, Place to Be Nation, so PTB, that's close enough. So please reach out to me on there if you want to tweet me what your favorite Jimmy Eat World album is, what soundtrack. We can talk about that more. It doesn't matter. Just, you know, let me know some feedback, and let Tim know why you think Invented is also your favorite Jimmy Eat World album. Please do, because that would be cool to hear, because I've not heard a lot of people talk about that one. I think a lot of people jumped off the love of that band with after their popular ones, their super popular albums, and that's kind of sad, because they're still putting out some stuff. So, Tim, what do you have... how can people reach you, and what do you have coming out of your shows?
Yeah, so if you do want to at me on Twitter, I am Cyke68, that's Cyke68. And yes, by all means, tell me why Invented is your favorite Jimmy Eat World album as well. I'm the guy with the Vader avatar where it looks like he has his head on backwards.
And that is Vader the Wrestler, for the people listening to my show that aren't wrestling fans.
Yes.
I just want to make that clear for them, because I originally heard it was a Vader head, and I'm like, that's not Darth Vader. And then I felt so stupid. I'm like, duh. All my podcasting buddies are wrestling fans. So
Big Van Vader the Wrestler. He has his singlet on backwards. It looks like his head's on backwards. Anyway,
he also showed up on Boy Meets World, didn't he? Wasn't it Vader that showed up in Boy Meets World?
Yes, he sure did.
Okay, sorry, that was a little sidetrack, but that's my knowledge of Vader, sadly.
Yes, he and Jake the Snake Roberts were on that.
Jake the Snake, yes.
Good grief. And I mention this only because you can find me on a semi-regular basis on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. So not Place to Be Nation Pop, but Place to Be Nation Wrestling. My regular gig there, Survey Says, a WCW retrospective. That's myself and the aforementioned Andy Helene, also a great Jimmy Eat World fan, Andy Helene. Just talking about different topics in a 20-year almost 20 years now defunct wrestling promotion, World Championship Wrestling.
I did not realize it had been gone that long. I didn't grow up on wrestling, so I knew about it, but I didn't. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. Shortly before my love of Jimmy Eat World started was the death of WCW.
Did you think it deserved to die, and I think it also deserved to burn in hell?
I don't know if it deserved to burn in hell, but it probably did deserve to die, if I'm being honest.
I don't know why that just came to mind, just talking about something dying. I just thought of this is a good old Sam Jackson line.
The burn in hell was maybe a bit much for for the fate of this beleaguered wrestling promotion, but it needed the old Yeller treatment, no doubt. But I'll be the first to admit that. Beyond that, goodness, on Place to Be Nation Pop, Jennifer Smith and I have a brand new gig called Talkin' Pop. So we just started this, had our first episode in February. Episode 2 will be upon us within a few days, I feel like, of this particular podcast.
I didn't know you were recording this soon.
Yes, we are recording as we speak, David. Jennifer and I will be recording our second episode tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yep. So that's a little behind the curtains. How the sausage is made. So yeah, those are the two primary podcasts that I'm kind of a regular on. You mentioned Conversation Comics as well with Todd Weber. Right now we're going through the John Byrne, Chris Claremont run of Uncanny X-Men, sort of like a little mini-series here within Todd's Conversation Comics. He's been gracious enough to have me back on a few occasions now, and I imagine we'll be going through another installment to that pretty soon. So that reminds me, I should get in touch with Todd. So
yeah, I was hoping that was coming soon because I got behind on the show, and then I called up, and I was just like, no. Like, I knew there was long breaks in between episodes, but I caught up. I remember I was just like,
yeah,
I've been looking for it. And
yeah, well, some podcasts are weekly, some are monthly, some are kind of semi-monthly. That's kind of quarterly. I don't know. It's when Todd is available and I am available and our schedules can align. So,
well, yeah, a little behind the scenes with the different time zones, it definitely can make it more complicated, I'm sure.
But yeah, we both, I think, want to get back to that and probably wrap it up. We're getting down to the wire with that run of comics. So, but that's always fun.
Well, you can draw it out a lot longer though if you just do one issue an episode though.
Well, yes, that's true.
as happened, didn't that happen in one of the episodes, or was it two?
You know what? The most recent episode there was like a couple hours on a single issue, mind you. Mind you, I will say this is during the thick of the Dark Phoenix saga, which is one of the most acclaimed storylines in all of superhero comics ever.
Oh, of course.
So if anything deserved that kind of almost sort of decompressed treatment, I guess we can make a case for that.
No, it needed the Last Stand treatment. That's what it needed. Sorry. I know that's that one annoys any X-Men fan, much less one that actually read those original comics.
That one's a sore spot. Yeah. It's okay.
Well, so cool. All right. Well, yeah, those are your three shows. Okay. I was thinking of something else, but
not so far.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Tim, so much for listening to the show, for joining the show and talking about Jimmy Eat World. And I'll look forward to discussing Our Lady Peace with you soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me. This has been more fun, exceeded my expectations. So it's been a good time here on Sunday Groove.
All right. Well, guys, I will catch you down the road. Have a good one.